Welcome and thank you very much for joining us on episode 100 of the Blazers Edge podcast, presented to you today by BlazersEdge.com. I'm your weekend host, Chris Lucia. If you'd like to get a hold of us at the show, please do so anytime by emailing us at BlazersEdgePodcast@gmail.com. Real quick, before we get started with the show this week, I just want to give you a heads up. If you notice anything about the audio quality of this episode, I actually screwed up the microphone placement while I was doing the conversation portion of the podcast with David. I had my microphone turned backwards, so it's not going to be consistent with the quality that you're probably used to on this podcast, but it's not going to be an issue going forward, and I just wanted to give you a heads up. I also wanted to wish all of the listeners of the Blazers Edge Weekend podcast happy holidays. We'll be back again with another holiday episode next week for New Year's. Also, just so you know, you can rate, review, and subscribe to the Blazers Edge podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Joining me again for episode 100 of the Blazers Edge podcast is Blazers Edge news editor David McKay. David, thanks for coming on the show today, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really glad to have you here. We're here at episode 100. So I guess first off, I'd like to thank everybody who's listening and who's helped us make it to this point. Hopefully we'll get, 100 more episodes in before it's all said and done. But again, I really appreciate all the listeners for listening to the Blazers Edge podcast so far. And David, I really appreciate you coming on, man. You've been with the staff at Blazers Edge since about September, right?
Yeah, somewhere in there. That sounds right.
And you're doing the news editing, and you're doing a little bit of on-site reporting for us too, isn't that right?
Yeah, when the schedules line up correctly. I haven't been to practice in a little while now, but I think I'll be heading in sometime next week.
So right now you're working on your master's in multimedia journalism, right?
Yeah, at the UofO Portland campus. It's a lot of fun.
So I guess shout out to the Ducks there. Go Ducks. You got a proud Oregon alum here talking
Yay,
to you.
Yay, go us.
but at any rate, you somehow are finding time between grad school and your life and everything to get down to practices every once in a while and cover what's going on with the team. So can you expound a little bit on how that's been going this year and kind of what's that like, what your experience has been covering the team?
You see, the trick is not to sleep. That's where that time comes from. It's been good. I do have a difficulty occasionally juggling schoolwork and getting out to practice and getting things written and watching games, but that's just kind of how it goes. I mean, I've been busy like that for the past couple years. The social life kind of takes a hit, but it's great. I really love covering the team and talking to the guys when I can and getting my opinion out there, whether it's good or bad. It's mostly numbers these days. I like to throw out interesting facts, but yeah, it's a great time.
So do you have to get, when you're allowed to get into practices there, do you have to get involved in the media scrums there and just take what you get, or are you allowed any time individually with specific players?
Well, it depends. Usually I'll email ahead of time and be like, hey, can I talk to Farouk, or hey, can I talk to CJ and see if I can pull a one-on-one, but otherwise it's more of a scrum. It's kind of interesting. That's affected how I ask questions at school too, is anytime there's a gap in the conversation, I'll jump in. And I think that's starting to get on people's nerves, but that's habit from practice. You get a lull in the conversation. You gotta say, oh my gosh, how's the injury doing, before you get on to the next topic.
Well, that's great. We really appreciate it. I'm sure the readers appreciate it as well. You going down there for Blazers Edge and getting us quotes and getting us information from the players. It's been really nice having that at the site, and it's been really awesome having you as the news editor. Man, you've been posting like, geez, what do you post? Like 3, 4, 5 times a day sometimes?
I on average, I probably post maybe 2 or 3 times a day. And then I remember when LaMarcus was back that first time, we flipped the cover, like 3 times as a group?
Oh, it was a pretty crazy day. The first time the Spurs came back?
Yeah, that was nuts. But yeah, I hope to get out to practice a little more often once they get back from this current road trip and, get out there. I've been meaning to talk to Farouk for quite a while now, so that should be good.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, since you have kind of a firsthand account of what's going on with the team, and obviously you watch all the games, what do you make of the backup point guard situation in Portland? So we've been talking quite a bit lately about CJ McCollum running the backup point. And on Monday night, we actually saw CJ McCollum, miss the game alongside Damian Lillard. And that left third string point guard Tim Frazier playing 47 and a half minutes that night. I was kind of curious myself before the game, as I'm sure a lot of fans were, wondering what Terry Stotts was going to do and how he was going to manage those backup point guard minutes without McCollum and without Leonard. So based off the 47 minutes that we saw from Tim Frazier, David, did you like what you saw from him? Were any of your suspicions confirmed, or is the book still out on Tim Frazier? What do you think about him running the offense for as long as he did on Monday night?
You know, it was about what I expected, because, you know, he's a good facilitator. He has fantastic court vision. And I remember watching the post-game interview with Stotts, like, you know, what was your plan when he got in foul trouble? And he said he was going to play 48 minutes. That was plan B. But, no, Frazier's a solid player, and I really liked his game for a while. So to see him get minutes that big, from a basketball standpoint, I was just like, I'd like to have other people in there too. But as a fan, I was just like, yeah, bring it on. Score 50, do something, I don't know.
I was pretty stoked to see Tim Frazier get the opportunity in big minutes and get the opportunity to run the team with starters around him. You know, I think it was it might have been Jason Quick or Joe Freeman reported that he had played 53 minutes up to that point in the season, and he played almost that amount of time in one game. And it was good to see him get that kind of time alongside the starters and other guys who are really contributing to this Blazers team, and see what he could do around some of those guys, because a lot of his time in the past was kind of more or less at the end of quarters, kind of that end of, I think it's the end of the first quarter and the end of the third quarter a little bit. He gets about 90 seconds here and there just to give Damian Lillard that extra spell, because, you know, you have that 1.5 minutes of game time that Dame gets to sit out for, and whatever stoppages during the game. And then you have that TV timeout in between the first and the second and the third and the fourth quarter. So it's kind of an extended break for Dame. And that's really all we've really seen Tim Frazier play in, aside from, you know, whatever garbage time he's gotten. And we know with Terry Stotts and some of the guys on the team, they're playing it down to every last possession. So, you know, in terms of garbage time, there just hasn't even been that much of that for a rebuilding team this year. So to see Tim Frazier get those kind of minutes was really good. And one thing I noticed, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but his frame seems very, very slight. I think he's listed at 6'1", but it seemed to me that Jeff Teague and Dennis Schroeder from the Hawks on Monday night kind of made him look like a small, kind of a slight 6'1". Would you agree with that?
Yeah, he's a generous 6'1". If I'm standing next to him and he's in basketball shoes and I'm in dress shoes, you know, it's a toss up who's taller, and I'm just maybe a hair over 6 feet. So he's not a very big guy, which I think was part of why I was impressed with his defense last night. He did a pretty good job, because there's no favorable matchup for him there. But yeah, you know, at this point, his size hasn't really stopped him from accomplishing anything. So it's not a big issue. But yeah, he's not a very big guy.
And you mentioned earlier his Tim Frazier's court vision. And this was something on Monday night watching him play. It seems like he has a pretty solid ability, A, to push the ball up the floor. I think we knew that coming in based on the experience from the D League and seeing him in bit minutes last season with the Blazers and some kind of practices over the summer. We knew about the speed. We knew about the pedigree there with the D-League MVP and Rookie of the Year and all that. But one thing I did notice on Monday night was he was, you know, able to get into the lane and penetrate quite a bit. And I noticed that he drives the ball and he gets all the way to the rim. And it's kind of reminiscent in Steve Blake, if you remember. But he'll kick the ball out to the open man. He's rarely looking for his own shot, but always kicking it out to the open man. Which was awesome, and I thought that was a really cool part of his game to see, especially, you know, in the time that he got against a quality team like Atlanta and playing among other quality players. I thought that was really nice to see him be able to get that penetration and be able to kick it out. One thing that kind of worries me about him, and I think this has kind of been
you know, one of the knocks on him since his time in the NBA and since his time being a Blazer is his outside shot. Is that something that you could see coming around for him, or do you think that's going to be a struggle with him? Because I think a point guard for the Blazers, that outside shot just to keep the defense honest, if you can combine that with the penetration, I think that would be a really good couple of ingredients for a backup point guard.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little from column A, a little from column B. It'll come around, but it's going to be a lot of hard work. I know that was a major focus for him this summer when I talked to him before they headed to Vegas. Was he said he spent some big minutes with Damian really working on his three and just in practice seeing him get shots up. It's coming along. I think it's one of those things where to transition where you can apply it from practice to a game is going to be harder because, you know, you've got someone in your face and you're trying to pull the trigger. But that's going to be a challenge for him. And again, that actually may stem from a little bit with his height. You know, you've got people with length trying to defend and he's not exactly shooting over anyone. But that's something that will come along with practice. He hasn't had a whole lot of time to practice. I mean, that's one of the things we said. He practically doubled his minutes on Monday. So I think as he gets more time on the court or any time on the court at all where he can actually establish a rhythm, that's going to be really helpful there and it'll come along.
Well, talking about that kind of backcourt rotation, as it stands right now, you have Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum playing, 95% of the point guard minutes between those two.
Yeah, some unholy number.
Yeah, and you have Tim Frazier on the bench when those two are healthy. So assuming these two come back and they're healthy to play either this week or the next, do you think that we saw enough and Coach Terry Stotts saw enough from Tim Frazier on Monday to integrate him a little bit more into that backcourt rotation, maybe make it more of a 2.5 man point guard rotation as opposed to the 2-man rotation we're seeing right now with Lillard and McCollum?
I'd like him to, but I don't know if it's going to happen because Terry likes to keep it pretty tight. It'd be great to see Tim get some minutes in like the third quarter or something. I know that's one of the times that we've had the most trouble, but is to just get the ball moving, because a lot of times when we end up falling behind is when the ball movement stagnates, and that's where Tim excels. So if you can just put him in there at a time where, you know, Dame needs a little bit of rest and we really need to kind of get people going, I'd absolutely be down for getting him a few more minutes. I don't think it would push anything more than 10 a night tops, but that's something that I could see happening if let's say Dame misses this next game and maybe another one after that, two or three, and you end up seeing some big minutes from Tim over that stretch. I mean, it's kind of like what happened with Alan Crabb last year when Batum was out, is, you know, he got that stretch of starting, and then after that, you kind of realize, okay, he's relatively reliable. You want to start working him into the rotation after that. So it's possible. If it does happen, I think it'll be pretty minimal. But overall, you know, once Dame and CJ are back, you have the team's two leading scorers. They're going to be absorbing most of those minutes.
Yeah. Were you surprised to see Frazier play 47.5 minutes as opposed to maybe a guy like Luis Montero maybe getting an opportunity to go out there and initiate the offense a little bit? I know he's played maybe, what, a few seconds this season, maybe a little bit. I think he's been on the inactive list all season. Were you surprised to see Stotts go with Frazier for all 48 minutes there and not put Montero in at all?
Well, I think it was going to be score dependent, because as long as the Blazers were within 20 points and there was a chance that maybe they could make a run, I know they kind of did there at the end, he was just going to stick with Frazier. But let's say, you know, you hit the third quarter and they're down 25, 26 points and the game's kind of out of reach. At that point, I could see Montero getting in there for a stretch. I mean, still not a long stretch, but a stretch nonetheless. I think the preference would still be to give Tim as much time as he can handle while he has that opportunity.
Yokiero Luis Montero, man. I want to see him out there for a little bit, see what he can do while he's on the active list with Lillard and CJ hurt. I think you know, Cliff Alexander was able to come off the inactive list and along with Montero. It would have been nice to see a couple of those guys get some minutes on Monday night, but unfortunately we weren't able to see some of those end of the bench players. Were you kind of bummed out there?
Yes and no. I mean, I'm, to be honest, you know, I have nothing against Luis Montero. I'm glad he's here and I want him to do great things. But I was more interested in seeing Tim excel last night, or Monday night. But yeah, you know, it was one of those things where if we can get a bunch of guys in there, that's great. I think for the most part, Montero is going to be sitting out this season. Even if we'd have to get super injured for him to see any sort of significant minutes, which I guess we could try and qualify that with, you know, Damon CJ out. But him being the 15th man, he's really not going to get in there unless things are just really dire.
Yeah, I don't actually, you know, I think going into Monday's game and knowing that both Dame and CJ were going to be out, the top two leading scorers for the Blazers, I think I kind of thought personally that it would be viewed, and gosh, looking back, having watched Terry Stotts for, what, 3.5 seasons now, I probably should have known better than this, but I assumed that it would be more of a throwaway game. And in a couple of ways, it was. You saw Frazier get those 48 minutes, and you rarely are going to hitch your wagon to a guy like that for 48 minutes thinking you're going to win the game. So I guess that is a bit of an indication that Stotts knew what he was up against. But, you know, in those kind of situations, I think I would have preferred to really see some of those end-of-bench guys, you know, play the game. It's one of those things where you have, you know, a schedule loss, so to speak, mm-hmm. kind of your fifth game or your fourth game in 5 nights, second night of a back-to-back, those kind of situations where you pencil in a loss. And I think it's one of those situations where as a second night of a back-to-back with those two guys hurt, you just want to see, you know, guys 11 through 15 get a little bit of court time. I mean, how much did we get to see Connaughton on Monday night? Was it just a couple of minutes, right?
I think so. I'd have to bring up the box score. But I think part of that, though, is, you know, the situation Portland's in, most of the guys that are getting big minutes now are guys who last year were that 11 through 15. So it's kind of any minutes that anyone gets that aren't like Dame and CJ, for instance, is going to be like developmental and necessary. I mean, you look at the lineup we started, that was Frazier, Crabb, Farouk, Plumlee, and Vonleh. Yeah, I think that's correct. And, you know, Vonleh played almost not at all last year. Tim Frazier played almost not at all last year. Farouk was coming off the bench. You know, Crabb played spot minutes here and there, and Mason got some time when Lopez was injured out in Brooklyn. But, you know, those are still guys that need that run, and they're going to be more important to this team's function in the long term. So I wasn't hurt by not seeing the end of the bench.
That's absolutely true. And I guess this is somewhat related, but I guess I should ask, are you surprised at all to see Terry Stotts go out there and really take games down to the last minute before he's willing to kind of throw in the towel, even with a 10-point deficit? If the Blazers are down with 2 minutes to go, even if it's 10, 12, 13 points, you're still seeing Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, and a number of the starters and rotational players out on the floor. You see them, you know, going to the fouling method, putting opposing teams at the line, trying to get back into games where, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's more or less a loss. You know, with a minute and a half left, you're down by 10. But it seems to me every single game you watch these Blazers play, you know, not only do they seem like they feel like they're still in the game, they have the confidence, they're not backing down from teams, but they're playing every single game to the last whistle. Is that something you've noticed as well?
Yeah, and I think that has a lot to do with morale. I mean, when you're in a situation where you're rebuilding but not tanking, as the Blazers are, you need everyone to buy in. And if you get down to that stretch where you're losing, and every time you're losing by enough that you're probably not going to win, you say, all right, well, chalk it up, that's another loss, eventually you're going to kind of lose the faith of the team. And Terry's an excellent coach, and he's done a great job of integrating the players that are really key to this team's success. So fighting tooth and nail for every chance at winning is something we're going to see a lot from the squad. And that's also because, you know, these are competitors. These are professional basketball players. They don't like to lose. They don't want to lose. So any time there's a chance of not losing, they're going to grab at it.
How'd you like Mo Harkless on Monday night? Do you think, you know, with the performance that he had, do you think he's starting to turn a little bit of a corner for the Blazers? Or are you worried at all that this might be a flash in the pan in terms of Harkless being able to contribute on a consistent nightly basis for Coach Stotts and the Blazers?
I'd kind of occupy that middle ground. I think it'd be a bit reactionary to see him get bigger minutes and say, yes, turning a corner, but at the same time, I'm not willing to give up on him as someone who can legitimately contribute night in and night out. I think it's going to be one of those things where if he's afforded more time, he's going to do well with it eventually. Last night was pretty solid. I'd like to see him string together a few more games like that. Ultimately, you know, he's not going to surpass anyone in the lineup where he's at unless there are injuries. But for the time being, I think he's got a lot of potential. I think, again, if there are injuries, he's one of those guys who definitely could step up and suddenly go on a streak of several games where he's scoring, you know, 16, 17 a night if he has the minutes for it, because he's a pretty capable player. That being said, last night wasn't enough for me to look at this and go like, oh, all right, you know, all aboard the Mo Harkless Express. I think he's very gifted. But it's going to be a process.
He had some crazy athletic dunks. You saw him get an alley-oop where he had to reach back about a foot behind his head just to grab the ball to put it in. And then he had that dunk. Gosh, I can't remember if it was over Millsap or Horford or Mike Scott or whomever it was over. But he basically just climbed right over a guy on drive and dunked right on him. And it's those little flashes that you see out of Mo Harkless where you're like, okay, this is what he's here for. This is why this young guy is here getting playing time on this team. This is what he brings to the table.
And in that same vein, just to play devil's advocate, that's some of the stuff we saw from Elliot Williams a few years ago. And, you know, that's not entirely a fair comparison because Williams had some major injury issues. But, you know, he never quite got to a point where he was living up to what we thought he'd be. And again, a lot of that had to do with injuries. But, you know, athleticism is great and it's fantastic to have if you have the skills to go with it. And I think Harkless is still developing those. I think consistency is just going to be key for him. If he can get a little more consistent, he can be a guy who can come in and really bring that energy. Because, though, you know, rim-rocking dunks, as much as they only count for 2 points on the scoreboard, they can be a momentum changer occasionally.
Right. And so some of the other things he brings to the table, I think he's shooting about 31% from outside this year. You'd like to see, you know, that get a little higher. You know, he's got some contributions he can bring to the defensive end of the floor. And I think, you know, in small ball lineups, I don't think you're gonna see Harkless play much of that power forward spot, but you can slide Aminu up there to four, and then you have Harkless at the three, and then depending on who you put next to him, you would just have an ultra small, ultra long, ultra athletic lineup. And I think that's something that Terry Stotts has turned to on a number of occasions this season with just trying to, you know, inject some energy into that game. If you have those guys in the front court next to, you know, say a guy like Ed Davis, and then a couple of guys in the back court who can hit an outside shot and push the ball a little bit. You have a solid athletic lineup there that can put some points on the board and create some havoc for the other the opposing team in the passing lane. So it's kind of nice to see that. And I guess we can talk a little bit about this front court rotation because, you know, Vonleh, for all intents and purposes, he seems like he's going to be the starter for the short term. Is that what it seems like to you as well?
Yeah, and I think honestly he'll be the starter for the long term, if we're being real about it, because, you know, you can't really play Mason Plumlee and Ed Davis together for long stretches, and Myers is kind of at a point where he's going to be of more use to us off the bench. But I think Vonleh is, again, you know, I think most of the players are in this boat, is one of those guys who has a few skills and he needs to develop the other ones to be rounded enough to contribute consistently. Back to that ultra athletic lineup for a moment, I think it'd just be so neat if we were to throw spacing to the wind in favor of athleticism and defense, to have a front court, just, you know, occasionally try it out, of Harkless at the three with Aminu at the four and Davis at the five. Like, that's, again, ultra small but ultra athletic. And, you know, maybe that's just me playing mad scientist, but it'd be neat to see that from time to time. But, you know, as far as Vonleh goes, I've been generally underwhelmed thus far. And, you know, maybe that's not fair, but, you know, I just thought he'd be, and I mentioned this in a post a while back, but I just thought he'd be more involved on the offensive end for, you know, as much as that skill set has been touted. And again, part of that is playing with the starters who are, you know, making him the fifth option essentially. But I'd like to see more from him.
Do you think that Myers Leonard is suffering, you know, mainly because of, I don't know, you know, missing, I think he missed 7 games there, kind of knocked him out of his rhythm. I have a few kind of related questions about Leonard here that I'll kind of lump in together, but, you know, you see him get hurt and miss a number of games and then come back and ease back into it, and he's lost his starting position. You know, I think maybe that has kind of taken a toll on him. I've read quite a bit about how the game is kind of not really coming to him. Maybe he's thinking about it too much. And I'm also kind of curious personally, if losing Kim Hughes over the summer has anything to do with Myers Leonard's performance this year. I haven't thought about that. I don't want to TMZ it too much and talk about, you know, coaches getting fired and stuff affecting players' performance. But, you know, you read all the articles, you know, Myers Leonard's first several years in the league, and half of them seem to be about his bond with Kim Hughes and what he's learning from Coach Kim Hughes. And I guess the second part of that is that we're seeing, I think, Mason Plumlee has brought kind of a little hook shot down low. You've seen Myers Leonard go to that a little bit. Noah Vonleh, you've seen him post up a little bit and go to that hook shot, as much as it doesn't always work out for him. And so I'm wondering if there's a bit of a, maybe a coaching change in the front court, some kind of philosophy change there. If that transition from Kim Hughes to the current front court coaches, that the coaching staff down there that's working with the front court, do you think that may be affecting Myers Leonard at all, or do you think it's just a combination of everything that's kind of going on with him and the team right now?
It could be. I tend to think it's a variety of things. I mean, he went from being essentially buried to being in competition with a lot of guys directly. And that's something that, you know, he's going to have to work on, just being tough and getting in there and getting his own. But the biggest thing to me, and this is my personal theory, is that, you know, last year he wasn't really known around the league. And I guess you could make the argument that this year he isn't spectacularly known either. There's still plenty of announcers calling him Myles Leonard and Leonard Myers and stuff like that. But, you know, he's showing up on the scouting reports, and if you watch defenders, they're closing out on him. I, you know, at one point I even saw two players close out on him at the three-point line, and there's such a big difference between last year, when he'd get the ball at the three-point line and he'd kind of hesitate and everyone's going, oh my gosh, shoot or pass or do something, and then he'd nail the three because, you know, there's no one within 5 feet of him, whereas this year he gets the ball and he's got someone on him right away. And the difference between, you know, even when you're 7-1, a contested jumper, or, you know, having all that space to yourself, he's taken a dramatic hit to his field goal percentage, or at least his three-point percentage. I feel like it's 21, 22, something.
Yeah, we're at 23.8% on the season for Myers Leonard from outside.
Oof. So, like, I guess for most players over 7-1, that's to be expected.
Well, but, yeah, but when you're shooting, let's see, he's shooting 3.7 a game. So that's 24% on almost 4 three-pointers a game.
Now, I could be mistaken here, but I believe last year's Lance Stephenson, he set the record for like worst 3-point percentage for any player over 100 attempts at like 17. Myers isn't too far above that mark right now, and that's something that definitely needs to change.
Now this is, it's absolutely bonkers to think about, because looking at the season, and this may have been when you were a guest on the podcast that this was brought up. I know it was brought up a number of times on the show in the past this summer, but Myers Leonard shooting 50% from the field, 40% from three, and 90% from the free throw line. Last season, we were like, okay, we have this versatile weapon in the front court who's 7-1, who, wouldn't you know it, he can also get rebounds and play a little bit of defense as well. And a number of articles came out over the summer, some referencing him as a unicorn type of player, a guy who can hit the three on one end and defend the paint down low on the other end. And so far, it's just not materializing. He's shooting 41% from the field this year, 24% from three. He's got 88% from the free throw line, so I guess we can count on him to make that, his free throws. He's shooting less than one per game.
And I think that's actually part of why we're seeing him in the second unit is, you know, he had a lot of success last year where he was against lesser competition. And it's kind of one of those things, like to jump back to high school sports for myself, you know, on the tennis team, it was one of those things where if someone's really struggling, the coach will be like, all right, well, we're going to move you down a couple slots and try and get you an easy win to boost your confidence. And, you know, I think that's part of what we're seeing with Myers is like, hey, you know, you've been unable to experience success lately, so we're going to try and put you in it at times where you're going to have the least amount of pressure on you, and he still isn't performing.
Is it fair to say that this could be having the opposite effect? And that, you know, losing your starting spot to injury, it has got to be really frustrating. I think going into the season, presumably Myers Leonard probably felt pretty secure as a starter. And of all people on the team to supplant him in the starting lineup, I think Noah Vonleh is likely the biggest surprise if we're talking about front court players generally there. So, you know, I think coming back from injury, you kind of expect to have your spot back in the starting lineup, right? And you know, maybe you get a couple of games here to work yourself back into the rotation and get back into game shape. And I think that's what a lot of us assumed was going on at first with Coach Stotts, was limiting Myers and letting him kind of heal that shoulder a little bit, because he did come back, I think, a few games earlier than anticipated. Mm-hmm. But you know, now it seems like, you know, for the ostensible future, Noah Vonleh is in this spot, and I think, yes, it probably would help Myers on paper to play against lesser opponents or more limited defenders and give him an opportunity to maybe flourish in the things that he does well against second units. But I think on the flip side of that, don't you think, you know, if you're starting the first, I want to say it was, you know, 14 or 15 games of the season, you get hurt and then you come back and you lose that spot, that's definitely got to take a hit to your ego, right?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Myers, I feel, is a lot more emotionally stable than he's often painted. So I think he's just having a slump. I don't know if it's necessarily a lot to do with any dissatisfaction with his role. You know, he's not an exceptionally pouty guy. So it's hard to say. It could very well be that, you know, he's back and he's bummed that he lost his spot, but he's lost his spot before. We saw that with Joel Freeland. So if anything, I'm hopeful. I remain hopeful that it'll kind of ignite a spark and a little healthy competition between all the forwards to get and keep a spot will make all of them perform a little better. But yeah, for the time being, I think Vonleh's cemented in that role. And some of that has to do with potential for being here in the long term. I don't know for sure that, you know, Myers will be here even next year. I'd love to have him back, but Vonleh is an asset for the future that we know is going to be here for the future, unless some amazing trade opportunity comes up and it's just, you know, you have to go for it. But I think that's honestly a big part of it, is you look at who you have, who can benefit the most from being on the court, who's a detriment right now on the court. Right now, that's Myers, you know, as much as I hate to say it, and who's really going to bring the most to the team, and you have to make them fight to be that guy.
You mentioned a little bit earlier on that Myers Leonard, I think he gets maybe, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is it fair to say he might get kind of a bad rap? I think, you know, coming into the league, he was considered to be, I mean, he only played 1 year in college, right? Maybe two seasons. And he had switched positions, you know, having that growth spurt in high school and everything. And there was the book on him, I think, was that he was a really emotional player. And I think that maybe that's kind of carried over a little bit the last couple of seasons. And you mentioned that he's not quite as emotional or as unstable as he's painted out to be, I think. And that's based on your experience watching the team up close a little bit and mm-hmm. talking to some of the players, right?
Yeah. That's one of the things is, you know, Myers, if you talk to him, and I know at Media Day especially, he was in a raucous mood, but he's, you know, he's sarcastic. He's very confident. I think a lot of what we see is, you know, you see those post-game interviews where the team's just lost and they'll ask a very leading question, something like, you know, how are you dealing with this slump you're having? Or, you know, don't you think you can do better? And it's really hard to take something like that and spin it in a way where you don't seem like you're really down on yourself. And I think he's motivated to do better. And a lot of times that comes across as being like, you know, oh gosh, I know I've been bad and I know I can do better. And, you know, this really dramatic thing where in reality, you know, he's just doing what he's supposed to do. He's motivated like everyone else is. And he's pretty stable. I mean, and part of this could be that, you know, when he came into the league, his game was pretty soft. And, you know, it's easy to look at a guy who plays soft and think they are soft. But, you know, just because he's not necessarily the most physical guy out there doesn't mean he doesn't have his own personal situation under control. And I think that he's really going to come back here and surprise people once he kind of gets in a rhythm. I think it's less of a mental funk than people are attributing it to. But we'll just kind of see how that plays out. You know, it's not uncommon for any player to go through an extended slump.
On a related note to Myers being, I guess, a bit misunderstood by fans, and I don't want to put you on the spot too much here, but based on your experience kind of, you know, watching the team, getting to know the guys a little bit and working with some of the other reporters and stuff and reading about the team, do you think that there are any other personalities on the Blazers that are a bit misunderstood or guys that we just don't know that much about?
Oh, gosh. Well, I haven't been around this year's squad a ton compared to last year. I was around a little bit more often. But let's see. If I had to go through, like, Tim, very competent, very grounded, very funny guy. I don't think there's any misunderstanding about that, though. I think that comes across pretty well. Chris is hilarious. You know, I think everyone is pretty well represented for the most part. Dame can be a bit mechanical at times, but, you know, he knows what to say and when to say it. I suppose the thing that, I mean, this is kind of a tangent, that surprised me last year was Robin Lopez. He reads a lot better than he speaks, in a sense that, like, if you read something he says, it's, you know, oh, wow, that's very humorous, and it's true. But in person, you know, he's very nervous and kind of avoids eye contact. And I was surprised that there was less in-person charisma involved there.
Yeah, I was, you know, when we've had beat reporters on the show before, I try to ask what it's like interacting with some of the guys. And that's kind of, to a man, it seems that Robin Lopez seemed to be one of the more, I don't know what the right word is, kind of enigmatic, maybe just mm-hmm. you didn't get what you expected from him.
it's really, yeah, that's true. It, you know, his responses aren't necessarily tailored to the question you asked. And a lot of times he looks like he's looking past you or looking through you or sometimes not at you at all. But But yeah, I think the best guy to interview last year was definitely Wes, because, you know, if you asked a smart question, he'd give you a smart answer, and he was always in a pretty good mood about things. This year, I think Noah Vonleh, he could, you know, he's 20 years old. He gets nervous. He could stand a little more experience, because you can ask him a question and he'll almost parrot back to you what you want to hear. So it's like, you know, how important is rebounding tonight? And he'll say something like, oh, rebounding is very important. I think it's good that we get out there and really get those rebounds. So you could even phrase that again and be like, who's the best reporter? Do you think I'm the best reporter here? And he's like, oh, yeah, you're the best reporter here. I think that speaks for itself. So, you know, you don't always get these deeply analytical answers from him, but I think that'll kind of come with experience.
Coach Stotts has to be pretty fun though, right?
Yeah, he's no nonsense. He very straightforward. Don't ask him about the lineup, because he either doesn't know yet or he's not going to tell you. I remember last year, I think it must have been just after All-Star break, the night before the trade deadline, I wanted to talk to Will Barton. I'd put in a request, and that was ultimately a no-go, as it turned out he was on his way out the door. But I asked Terry, I said, you know, does not knowing who you'll have in the lineup tomorrow change how you game plan for, I think it was the Utah Jazz? And he just gave me this look like, you are such an idiot. I was like, no, please don't set me ablaze. But he said, no, you know, I'm not going to talk about that. I think that was actually the night that Jerome passed away, but yeah, that was interesting. That was rough.
No, I really like Stotts, and I think anybody who frequents Blazers Edge, if they look at the instant recaps of the games that get posted within a couple minutes of games wrapping up, we have a user at the site who goes by A-Kicks, who he was actually able to... someone in the organization got a hold of the Blazers and Terry Stotts and organized this meetup, and this user, A-Kicks, was able to go to Stotts' office and talk to him and hang out. But after every single game, A-Kicks... is usually the first commenter in the game recap thread, and he always has a photo Terry Stotts' head photoshopped onto some random movie poster with a funny quote behind it. Have you seen those at all?
Oh gosh, no! I need to run into the comment sections more often and check that.
Check that out, and listeners, if you haven't seen that, check that out, because A-Kicks brings it super hard.
I know I've seen on Reddit before. Are you familiar with Reddit? Do you frequent or check it out at times?
Every now and then when I'm forced to, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's this pretty common thing where people will post an image of Mario Chalmers' face and, you know, hide it as if it's something else. But there's one that's cropping up a little bit here and there of Terry Stotts with this just smug grin. I'll see if I can track that down. I'll show it to you later.
Well, if we're looking through, we have the deal with Getty Images at SB Nation. It's where we get access to their archived pictures, and I love looking through at the Terry Stotts pictures, particularly the in-game ones, because the expressions that he has on his face are just priceless. Like, he's always has either like a really odd smirk on his face, like the game against the Clippers when he was hacking DeAndre and they were down by however much they were down by, they were not going to get back into that game using that method, and the camera panned over to Doc Rivers and he was angry. And it pans over to Stotts, and he's just sitting there smirking. Like, I got you on this one.
I always enjoy the face when we're down or something has gone wrong, but there's really nothing you can do. He'll kind of puff out his cheeks just a little bit and frown at the same time.
Have you ever seen the shrugs emoji? The one where it's just a little guy throwing up his shoulders and shrugging?
Yeah, yeah.
That's Terry Stotts in a nutshell when the team is down. That's what he looks like when he doesn't get a call, is the shrug emoji.
Yep.
So back to Blazers on the court this year, and we'll wrap talking about this. Cool Breeze, man. There's seems to be the man of the hour for the Blazers lately, for Blazers fans lately. He's been talked about on every single Blazers Edge podcast recently. quite a bit. I've been talking about him for as long as I can remember. He's been one of my, well, I've been one of his biggest fans. I've always liked him as a guy, and I've always liked his work ethic. He's always, you know, he's always seemed to put in the effort, put in the time and practice, even though he's not getting consistent minutes.
Oh yeah, you know, I mean, the first, sorry to cut you off. The first time I ever spoke with him, I think a couple years ago, somewhere in there. I don't know. I had asked a variety of players, you know, how they trained for the upcoming season over the summer, if they did anything differently, and almost everyone said, "Nah, I was just chilling." And then I talked to Crab, and he was like, "Yeah, you know, I've been hitting the gym twice a day and working on specific elements of my game, and I'm really trying to crack rotation." And that was really impressive to me, especially at such a young age, that he was working so hard and just trying to get into it.
No, he's a nice kid and a good teammate, and we like a lot of things about him. And, you know, I guess I should set the record straight real quick on the podcast. I know that Tara and Joe, who fill in every once in a while on the Blazers Edge podcast, Joe has been a huge Allen Crabb fan, and she claims to have been the first person at Blazers Edge to really be talking about Crabb quite a bit. And she mentioned that she'd been talking about him for weeks. That's weeks with a W there. If you want to go ahead and Google Chris Lucia, Allen Crabb.
Oh, gosh, right now?
We don't have to do it on the spot, but I've been at Blazers Edge for, this is my third season, so you can certainly find, I think, going back to at least last season, me talking about Crabb. So, Joe, just clearing this up right now. Crabb Island, I was the original occupant on. You're welcome to come on Crabb Island and join me and hang out with the cool breeze. But
I would like to suggest that we are Crabb Archipelago, as before I joined Blazers Edge, I was very much on the Crabb wagon as well.
All right, there you go, Joe. So you definitely have been giving him his due lately, and we definitely appreciate it. But in terms of talking about Cool Breeze first, come on, give us a break here, man. Me and David have been on this for a long time. But I do want to talk about him a little bit because, you know, if we're looking at his game, I think, you know, everybody, we've always kind of really appreciated, he's, you know, we mentioned just working hard in the off season, even though he wasn't guaranteed time, and the time that he did get, he seemed to be professional about. He never really demanded his own shots too much. He took what he got, pretty much the open corner three in seasons past. This year, Stotts seems to be running a few more plays for him, or at least maybe the ball seems to be finding him more in opportunities. I know the Blazers kind of, the offense that they run is kind of, you take the first good shot that you get, AC seems to be in position to take good shots often. And it seems to be paying off for him quite a bit this year. If we're going through, you know, the numbers on the season, he's played 30 games, 24 and a half minutes per game as of this podcast. He's hitting 47.2% of his field goals and 35.7% of his threes. And he's in double figures averaging for the first time in his career in his third season at 10.1 points per game. He's also getting a couple of rebounds and an assist and barely turning the ball over. I mean, it's hard to look at Crabb's game and find something that you don't like. And I guess part of that is because he's more of a kind of your prototypical role player, where he just kind of takes what he can get, and he works, you know, within the framework of the team defense and helps out on that end of the court as well. He's never going to be a superstar per se. At least we don't anticipate him becoming a superstar, just kind of that solid role player guy. And he seems to be kind of getting his due now from not only, you know, the people covering the team, but also from fans. So one thing I want to ask you before about Cool Breeze a little bit. Do you fall into the crowd that says, yeah, he's a good, solid player. He deserves these minutes, and we'd like to see him, you know, continue to be in the rotation? Or are you one of those fans who kind of looks at it as maybe it's too much of a small sample size, and in fact, maybe he's being a bit overrated by some of us who are talking about him?
I think for the most part, I fall in camp A. You know, this is what I expected to see from Crabb this season if he got minutes, and now that he's getting them, he's using them very well. I think the biggest thing is, like, he's one of those guys where he doesn't really do anything wrong, or he doesn't do much wrong, and as long as he continues building on the things that he does right, you know, he's just going to be more and more useful because he's solid on defense. He's smart on offense. He does everything he's supposed to. And, you know, as his efficiency climbs up, we're just going to see him get better and better. And, I don't think he's going to be a superstar or not necessarily even a starter, depending upon his career arc. But I very much think that he's the real deal here. He's doing exactly what we want him to, and he's doing it because it's what he knows how to do.
Now, defensively speaking, I think he's kind of had a reputation as, you know, a solid NBA defender. At least that's kind of, if I'm gauging the responses that he's gotten over the last three seasons from Blazer fans that I've heard, it seems to be his reputation is that of a solid guy, or at least a guy who doesn't hurt the team defensively. I've seen a little bit in the comments section at Blazer's Edge, some stats come out that say that the team is a little bit better off, in fact, defensively, when AC is not on the floor. Is this something that lines up to you with the eyeball test when you're watching him play? I mean, because I personally think that he's, at the very least, a solid defender, right?
Well, I mean, the thing about that stat is you have to kind of look at it with, like, what's being exchanged there. Because when Crab's not on the floor, a lot of the times that's because Aminu is. And Aminu is an A-plus defender in my eyes. Or at least, you know, he's known more for that being his main contribution. So if you take Crab off the floor and say, yeah, the Blazers are better off, that's not necessarily, I mean, it could partially be. I'd have to look extra close now that it's been brought to my attention. But for the most part, I think that has less to do with, you know, Crab being absent and Aminu than Aminu being there. You know, you have some guy who's been brought in explicitly for his defensive abilities, and, you know, if you sub Crab out of the game for him or vice versa, there's going to be an exchange there, however minor.
So I guess we'll wrap here. I'll ask you one last question about Crab, because we mentioned that he's averaging 10 points a game, double figures for the first time in his career. He had a stretch over the last couple weeks where he tied his career high in back-to-back games with 18 points. On Monday night, he went out against the Hawks. I know he needed 18 attempts to get there, but he set his career high at 19 points. So do you see Crab as being, in terms of the long-term vision of this team, do you think he's going to be a big part of this offense? Do you see him continuing to be a double-figure guy for the Blazers this season?
This season, absolutely. I think, if he gets minutes, he'll do good things with them. He's going to average, I don't want to play Nostradamus here, but I can see him averaging, if you just erased everything before this point where he was kind of like starting to get minutes and spotty stuff here and there, where he had single-digit scoring efforts. If just from this point on, I could see him averaging 12, 13 points a game, maybe a little bit more than that. I think, honestly, if CJ sits tomorrow, then, you know, he has a chance at cracking 20 points. Because at a certain point, you have to look at the roster and say, where does the offense come from? And right now, efficiency-wise, that's Crab. And, you know, if the volume's there as well, he's going to continue to score at a high rate. Once he, you know, returns to a smaller role, a role even now that's not necessarily that small, I think we're going to see him fluctuate for the most part between 10 and 15 points a night with the occasional burst and, of course, the occasional lapse. But, yeah, he's going to be a double-digit scorer, I believe.
Yeah, I think he's, like you mentioned, this season for the near-term future, I think he's certainly going to be a contributor now. I believe he is going to be an unrestricted free agent this summer. I could be wrong, but as a second round draft pick, I believe he's going to be coming up on unrestricted free agency.
That sounds right.
And he's making, if I recall correctly, under $1 million, like maybe $1.1 million this season. So, you know, I think we're going to see him on the team for the entire season, because his salary would imply that he's kind of a throw-in to a deal, but I think he's proven that he has enough worth to this team to not be a throw-in to a deal. And in order to trade him away, you'd have to package him with a guy who makes enough money, you know, to bring back a guy who can contribute as much as he can. And if I'm just looking at the numbers, it doesn't really make sense to me why Crabb wouldn't stick around this season.
I don't see him getting traded necessarily. Again, like you said, he would appear to be a throw-in, but if you're getting a guy that's contributing at this level and you're only paying him $950K a year, you got to hold on to that. I mean, like, what are you honestly going to get back in a trade that's going to be that much value for that little salary? And I mean, his qualifying offer next year, I think, is $1.1 million. I mean, he'll get paid more than that regardless, but he's probably going to be sticking around for at least the end of this season, and I'd love to see him continue to be on the team in the long term.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering, I guess, based on the $950,000 that he's making this year, is what his value, if he keeps this up, what kind of price tag the Blazers are going to have to pay for him to keep him on the team going forward. I just wonder that, what he's going to be worth. Do you have any, I don't know if it's fair to ask this early on in the season, do you have some kind of a ballpark to where you could see something being realistic for him being worked out with the Blazers in terms of dollars?
That's kind of hard to gauge with the TV deal coming into effect this summer, but fortunately they have enough room that if they really want to, they've got a couple of their key players already signed for the near future on declining deals, and Dame's salary is going to jump super high, but they'll definitely have room to keep guys like Crabb around. I would guess, and this could be completely off, so grain of salt, mountain of salt, whatever you want to take it with, I would say he could, with the new deal, if he continued at the rate he's going through the rest of the season, I could see him getting $8 million a year. I mean, that, wow. I know that's really high. I know that sounds really high, but like, how old is Crabb right now?
23.
All right, he's 23 years old. On the offensive end, he's incredibly efficient. He's doing more than Al-Farouq Aminu is, I believe, or at least is comparative from a scoring standpoint. Almost as comparable in a defensive standpoint. And Farouk was signed. He's got $8 million a year right now, right? And that was signed before the spike there. And so, if we're considering that other teams are going to be potentially bidding on him, $8 million might be more than he's ostensibly worth. But at the same time, it might be the price you have to pay to keep him. But this is all conjecture because I really have no clue how exactly A, he's going to perform for the rest of the year, and B, what kind of effect the cap spike is really going to have on the league. That's something that everyone's kind of guessing about right now.
Yo, Cool Breeze is priceless to me, man. So Paul Allen, if you're listening this summer, open up the pocketbook. It doesn't matter what it costs. But David, I want to thank you for coming by the Blazers Edge Weekend podcast. I think this is probably your third or fourth time. So thanks for coming on during the holiday week. I know things get busy, but it's been nice having you, man. You can come back anytime.
Yeah. Hey, just let me know when you want me on, and I'm happy to join you.
And that's going to do it on episode 100 of the Blazers Edge podcast. I'd like to thank you for listening. And I'd also like to thank Blazers Edge news editor David McKay for joining us on the show. Happy holidays to everyone listening. We'll be back next week for New Year's. Make sure and tune into the Blazers Edge podcast early next week to hear Phil Nasons and Dave Deckard. If you're interested in the outro music for this week's episode, that was performed by local beatmaker Odar. You can hear more of his work at soundcloud.com/odarbeats. I'm Chris Lucia. Thank you for joining us on the Blazers Edge Weekend podcast.